This is WPFP AM Park Falls, a Civic Media radio station.
Yeah. Can you feel it, baby? I can too.
Stop to rush by. Honey, is he twisted dance? Can't find my drink, a man. need it, spend the less though.
I got it
in your pocket.
FM.
Trying to smile, but the air is so heavy and dry.
93.1 FM.
This week on Viewpoints.
Imagine if these satellites that are now monitoring and trying to see where people are trying to flee for their lives and help them out and these sorts of things. Imagine if a piece of debris just hit a couple of these. It's game over.
The growing issue of space junk. Then.
You are taking the silver screen of Hollywood or the brick and mortar stage of Broadway and having families launch in-home global digital entertainment businesses.
What's it really like being a family social media influencer? I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Nowadays, most value menus are just kind of menus, unless you're at KFC. With Taste of KFC deals, you can get a hot, juicy drumming thigh, hand-breaded in 11 herbs and spices, a side of creamy mashed potatoes and gravy, and a flaky, buttery biscuit for just $4.99. Son of a bucket, that's a good deal. Taste of KFC deals. Available all day, every day. Only at KFC. It's finger-licking good. Prices, participation, and product offering may vary. Tax, tips, and fees, extra.
The Radio Health Journal podcast gives listeners the latest news on what's trending in health, science, technology, and more.
Why are certain providers and medical doctors not listening to family members who have lived through a disease path for such a long time?
Featuring medical experts who break down complex topics in a way that's easy to understand. Radio Health Journal podcast, available wherever you find your favorite podcasts and at radiohealthjournal.org.
Earlier this month, a satellite captured a photo of an old discarded rocket stage floating in space. Scientists estimate that this piece of space junk is taller than a three-story building and has circled the Earth for more than 20 years. This leaves us wondering what really happens to all of the dead satellites, rockets, and other hardware that's been launched into space. Where does it all go? Or not go? Dr. Jonathan McDowell is an astronomer and astrophysicist at the Center for Astrophysics at Harvard and the Smithsonian.
There are several thousand satellites that are still orbiting the Earth that are dead. When a satellite dies, it doesn't just fall out of the sky. It's still got orbital velocity, just like the moon. It doesn't need an engine to stay up, right? And so there's plenty of dead satellites up there. And when you launch a satellite, the way you get it into orbit is with a rocket. And the upper stage of the rocket that pushes the satellite to orbital velocity has got orbital velocity too. And so it ends up in orbit. And so there's several thousand leftover rocket stages whizzing around the Earth.
And some of these rocket stages have leftover fuel and years later explode in space, creating small bits of shrapnel forever floating in orbit. Satellites also collide into each other from time to time.
There have been a number of military anti-satellite tests, as they're called, where the various militaries, Russia, America, China, India, have smashed missiles into a satellite and broken it up, which is really bad because it's sort of dangerous for all the other traffic.
So how much space junk surrounds our planet? The latest estimate puts it at 25,000 objects that are all at least the size of a softball or larger.
We think there may be millions of smaller pieces that just are too small to show up on the radars. So, and they're dangerous as well. You know, they may be small, but if they hit you at 17,000 miles an hour, that's going to hurt. And so there's a huge problem with satellites having to dodge this debris all the time and sometimes just getting hit by it.
There are almost 10,000 active satellites currently orbiting Earth with plans to launch thousands more in coming years. While this seems like a lot, billions of people rely on these machines every day for GPS, cellular coverage, internet, and weather forecasting.
10% are things that work and 90% are basically garbage. Rocket bodies, dead satellites, pieces of satellites, nuts, bolts, that sort of thing.
That's Dr. Maura Bajja, an associate professor of aerospace engineering and engineering mechanics at the University of Texas at Austin. He's also the co-founder and chief scientist of Privateer Space. Bajja says that many experts are worried about the growing space junk issue because even the smallest pieces of debris can damage a working satellite and knock out major services.
So much information is uniquely provided by satellites. We couldn't get the data in other ways. Imagine if these satellites that are now monitoring and trying to see where people are trying to flee for their lives and help them out and these sorts of things. Imagine if a piece of debris just hit a couple of these. It's game over. There's just no way to support, learn, know any of these things.
And all of this floating trash poses a danger to humans in space. Astronauts aboard the International Space Station have had to take cover several times as they've made their way through heavily littered areas. There's always a chance that a bad collision with one of these fast-traveling pieces could critically damage the station. So, what's being done to clean up this mess? There are several different approaches to clearing this debris, but McDowell highlights one innovation in particular.
China has gotten into the space junk game, or the space junk removal game, I should say, and had a garbage truck in space that went up to a dead navigation satellite that was contaminating a valuable orbit, the geostationary orbit. And they clamped onto this satellite and boosted it up another several hundred miles and then let it go and came back down to the same geostationary orbit to look for a new target to tow. And so it's sort of like a tow truck in space. And so just clearing the junk out of the busiest lanes.
An important part of this conversation is that there's space junk at varying levels of Earth's orbit. The garbage truck idea is great for moving debris that lives higher up and is further away from the planet, but there's also thousands of pieces of junk in low Earth orbit that will eventually fall back to Earth. While this may sound like a win-win, these satellites, rockets, and other items all burn up as they re-enter the atmosphere, releasing small aluminum oxide particles, which damage the stratospheric ozone layer. Between 2016 and 2022, the presence of these particles surged eightfold, according to a study published earlier this month in the journal Geophysical Research Letters. Researchers warn of the critical long-term effects to the atmosphere if this trend continues. Another big focus in the field is the need for improved regulation on what's launched into space to begin with. The successful removal of 5 satellites doesn't mean much if 20 more replace it.
Aside from a couple of treaties that are broadly interpreted, there isn't much else. So pretty much any country can launch almost whatever they want. There are treaties talking about trying to not put weapons in space, you know, nuclear weapons and just weapons in general, these sorts of things. But yes, there's broad interpretation to the treaties.
Between our heavy reliance on satellites and our growing focus on private and public space travel, it's important that Earth's orbit is cleaned up and maintained over time. To find out more about this topic and our guests, Maura Bajja and Jonathan McDowell, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment was written by our executive producer, Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, the explosive growth of family influencers when Viewpoints returns.
Summer is the season we all look forward to, and Macy's is kicking it off with summer's greatest hits, a celebration of those spontaneous moments that we'll remember forever. That day at the beach, backyard barbecues, summer weddings, and fireworks. Because no matter what summer has in store, Macy's is here for the ride, for the big days, and all the little moments that make up summer's greatest hits. Let's make this a summer to remember. Check out Macy's.com/summerhits today.
The Radio Health Journal podcast gives listeners the latest news on what's trending in health, science, technology, and more.
Certainly, we all want to see suicide prevention, and I'm certain that it does work to a degree. It's when I hear that all suicides are preventable that it makes me bristle, because they are not.
Featuring medical experts who break down complex topics in a way that's easy to understand. Radio Health Journal podcast, available wherever you find your favorite podcasts and at radiohealthjournal.org.
Nowadays, most value menus are just kind of menus, unless you're at KFC. With Taste of KFC deals, you can get a hot, juicy drumming thigh, hand-breaded in 11 herbs and spices, a side of creamy mashed potatoes and gravy, and a flaky, buttery biscuit for just $4.99. Son of a bucket, that's a good deal. Taste of KFC deals, available all day, every day, only at KFC. It's finger-licking good. Prices, participation, and product offering may vary. Tax, tips, and fees extra.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? On America's birthday weekend, why not stop by America's number one brakes destination? Right now, you can save 15% when you buy a set of OE quality Duralast pads and rotors, and up to 50% when you bundle Shop Pro brake cleaner and brake fluid with SilGlide brake lubricant. It's just part of our 4th of July sale at AutoZone.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
If you grew up during the social media era, you've probably had quite a few moments from your childhood shared on the internet. Between cute baby photos or posts commemorating special events like birthdays and graduations, many children, teens, and young adults have had their lives chronicled on social media. Experts like Leah Plunkett, author of Sharenthood: Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online, and faculty at Harvard Law School have dubbed this phenomenon sharenting.
Sharenting refers to all the ways that parents, as well as other trusted adults, transmit children's private information digitally.
Using those definitions, really any parent online is sharenting to some degree. But when does it become a problem? While most families only share private moments with a close circle of family and friends, some have chosen to make these more public. Right now, some of the most popular yet controversial accounts on social media are family influencers. These families make a living by documenting their daily life, particularly their children, through YouTube videos, TikToks, and Instagram posts. One former family influencer, Grant Konbalinov, says he got into the business after videos of his children unexpectedly went viral on TikTok.
I started to post on TikTok a little bit before the pandemic. I want to say like a year before. And, you know, I was able to get up to like 80 or 90,000 followers. And then I made a video with my daughter. It was just, I was having her repeat, like, I will never have a boyfriend. And she screamed like no at the end, and it blew up and got like millions of views. And then I made a video with my son and it got millions of views. And I was like, you know what? Maybe we should start doing this. Why not, you know, like explore this new avenue?
Almost overnight, Konbalinov's TikTok account climbed to 3.3 million followers. Quickly, money started flowing in from the platform and brand deals. The family started getting invites to new places and experiences, and would even get stopped on the street by excited viewers. But while there were many perks to their newfound fame, Konbalinov couldn't shake the feeling that something was off.
I kind of started to notice we would go on a trip, let's say, to like Disney, and I would not want to gather any content in Disney just because like I want our kids to have fun and enjoy it. But every time that I would just want to like take a picture or a video just for like memories, I would notice that they would try to like put on an act that they would know would like resonate with people. And that's when I was like, this needs to stop. Our kids are not here to please others. You know, they're our kids and it's our job to protect them.
The experience forced him to listen to what people were saying and rethink his online presence. Though social media brought his family money and fame, he realized nothing was worth sacrificing the happiness of his children.
It didn't take a lot of thought at all, you know, and you would think something that's like bringing in pretty much what someone's full-time job brings in from a 30-second video, it would be a hard decision, but it was not a hard decision at all. You know, I said, let me sleep on it, woke up in the morning and just started privating videos and never posted them after that.
In the 2 years since this decision, he's lost hundreds of thousands of followers, along with several sponsorships and brand deals. Though his choice was unpopular at the time, since then, many popular family creators have followed in his footsteps. More and more are refusing to share their kids' faces online, with some removing them from their content completely.
Rarely, but still significantly, children can be the victim of criminal, illegal, dangerous acts by people who figure out who they are and where they live in real life and engage in criminal, illegal, or threatening behavior. Children may also experience personal and emotional and psychological and relational distress at having their story told to the world before they're ready to tell it, and in a way and to an audience that they might not have picked. Last but certainly not least, children may experience decisions or predictions being made about them by stakeholders who learn things or think they learn things about them from their online personas that may not be true.
Though all children online, not just influencers, can have these things happen to them, kids with a public presence are more at risk. A recent report by the New York Times found that many of these family and child influencer accounts, primarily the ones featuring young girls, had large followings of adult men. Reporters looked at the posts and found a small but alarming number of inappropriate comments. To make matters worse, the rapid explosion of AI can turn a completely innocent photo or video into something different entirely.
I am including a child's face, a child's voice, everything about a child in this is even more vulnerable than it was a year and a half ago, a year ago, 6 months ago. And I would really, really encourage parents, grandparents, and other trusted adults to really go as minimalist with the sharenting as possible, especially during this new AI era, and especially during a time where we have yet to see comprehensive ethical and practical privacy, security, and related legal reforms around AI.
With so many negative effects, why are families still pursuing influencing and internet fame? Well, most parents make more money from brand deals than a typical 9-to-5. It also allows one or both parents to stay at home with the kids while simultaneously earning an income. But while it's clear that family influencing is a lucrative business, who's getting all the cash? Though the kids are usually the stars, until recently there weren't any protections ensuring that these profits were set aside for them.
Illinois will become the first state in the country to have a new ethical, practical child labor law that protects child influencers, become effective later this summer, July 2024. And in the Illinois law, if a family influencer business reaches a certain level of financial compensation and draws on a certain amount of content involving a child, then there are financial requirements that are based on California's longstanding Coogan law, where a percentage of the earnings have to be kept in trust for the child until they reach the age of majority.
Bills similar to the Illinois law are moving through state legislatures across the country. And though this is a huge step towards protecting child influencers, it can't undo the damage of growing up with an online presence.
We know that children and teens who grow up in households that are running child or family influencer operations as family businesses are experiencing some of the same challenges and also at times opportunities that child entertainers who hit it big or who aspire to hit it big have long faced, which can be feelings of real exposure and betrayal and anxiety upon getting older and seeing just how much of their lives were recorded. And we are hearing more now that some of the children and teens who were part of the initial wave of influencer families are getting older and talking more about their experiences, that those consequences can be really devastating and very long lasting.
One of these former child influencers is Cam Barrett, one of the most vocal advocates against sharenting. From a young age, Cam's mother documented private moments, such as her first menstrual period and a teenage car accident, on her public Facebook account. Even though her mom didn't have the following that some of these influencers do today, it caused Barrett great anxiety and stress that her friends, classmates, and peers knew such personal details. As a result, Barrett and her mom now have a strained relationship.
Once something is shared digitally, especially in the form of a social media post, even if it's set to private, you really do lose control of where it goes and what is done with it now and pretty much in perpetuity. So I would really encourage parents to ask themselves, do I need to say this digitally? right? If I'm just trying to stay in touch with old friends, maybe I send this as a text message via a secure messaging app to people that I can verify are actually the people who are going to have it.
And Konbolenov agrees. Even though he took his kids off social media a long time ago, it still upsets him that their private information is out on the internet. He urges parents to keep kids off social media until they're old enough to fully grasp what they're getting themselves into. To find out more about Leah Plunkett, Grant Konbolenov, and all of our featured guests, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes, check out Viewpoints Radio on X, Facebook, and Instagram. This segment was written and produced by our associate producer, Grace Galanti. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
Summer is the season we all look forward to, and Macy's is kicking it off with summer's greatest hits, a celebration of those spontaneous moments that we'll remember forever. That day at the beach, backyard barbecues, summer weddings, and fireworks. Because no matter what summer has in store, Macy's is here for the ride, for the big days, and all the little moments that make up summer's greatest hits. Let's make this a summer to remember. Check out Macy's.com/summerhits today.
Spilled your drink? Quick, the quicker picker upper. Bounty picks up spills quicker. And each sheet is 2 times more absorbent, so you can use less than the leading ordinary brand. So you can get back to your night. Bounty, the quicker picker upper.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. NASA and SpaceX are planning to send astronauts to Mars, but human bodies may not be able to handle it. A study published earlier this month in the journal Nature Communications revealed that space travel damages the structure of kidneys, sometimes permanently. Scientists studied 66 astronauts who spent up to 6 months on the International Space Station. They found that the group had a heightened risk of developing kidney stones, and some parts of the organ actually shrank. The study suggests that the lack of gravity could be what's causing the stones to form. A trip to Mars would also expose humans to galactic cosmic radiation, or GCR. In a simulation, the lengthy round trip to Mars caused noticeable damage to human kidneys. Researchers believe that long-term exposure could lead to permanent side effects like kidney failure. The kidney is a late-responding tissue, so it could be years until the body shows the full impact of radiation. These findings are likely to change how future Mars missions play out. Scientists say that dialysis machines on spacecrafts could be a good way to prevent damage, but more innovation is needed. NASA and SpaceX are both planning to send people to Mars, with SpaceX founder Elon Musk aiming for a timeline of the next 10 to 20 years. That's Viewpoints Explained this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. In 2016, Drake released One Dance, a funky dancehall track that dominated the charts thanks in no small part to the influence of WizKid, who is a feature on the song and is one of the signature voices of the Afrobeats movement. Afrobeats is a genre that has been gaining in popularity in the UK, the US, and around the world. In addition to One Dance, you've heard Afrobeats if you've ever enjoyed Calm Down by Rema and Selena Gomez, or Water by Tyla. So what exactly is Afrobeats as a genre? Sheila Oh, a global music businesswoman and host of Afrozones, the first Afrobeats radio show in the US, explains.
Afrobeat originated from the western part of Africa. It started in Nigeria by Fela Kuti. Fela Kuti was known to be the king of Afrobeats, you know, in the early years, you know, way, way, way ahead of my time. pushing the genre with drums and live band and all kinds of, you know, percussion is different instruments. You know, a song could not be played on radio because a song was like 9 minutes long. It was all about the beats and the drums off the African continent. So Afrobeats really is sounds from Africa, sounds from the motherland.
And those sounds have been taking the world by storm, and now Afrobeats is a genre that looks to continue catapulting artists onto the top of the charts. One big way to do that has been gaining a foothold by contributing memorable features on other artists' work and giving them new sounds to play around with. For example, Afrobeats artists Wizkid, Burna Boy, St. John, and many others were featured on Beyoncé's album, The Gift. But these artists are also more than capable of doing it themselves. For instance, last year, Tyla won the inaugural Grammy Award for Best African Music Performance for her smash hit, Water. Sheila O says much of the success of the genre comes down to one thing. It's fun.
It is so non-threatening, it's non-violent, non-sexist. You know, nobody cares who you love, who you date, as long as you're happy. It's just feel-good music. No one's trying to put a gun to your head. It's not trap, you know what I mean? It's just feel-good music that makes people really happy.
To explore Afrobeats further, check out Sheila O's weekly show, Afrozones. You can head to their website at afrozones.com. That's AFROZONS.com for local listings. I'm Evan Rook.
Nowadays, most value menus are just kind of menus, unless you're at KFC. With Taste of KFC deals, you can get a hot, juicy drumming thigh, hand-breaded in 11 herbs and spices, a side of creamy mashed potatoes and gravy, and a flaky, buttery biscuit for just $4.99. Son of a bucket, that's a good deal. Taste of KFC deals. Available all day, every day. Only at KFC. It's finger-licking good. Prices, participation, and product offering may vary. Tax, tips, and fees extra.
The Radio Health Journal podcast gives listeners the latest news on what's trending in health, science, technology, and more.
Why are certain providers and medical doctors not listening to family members who have lived through a disease path for such a long time?
Featuring medical experts who break down complex topics in a way that's easy to understand. Radio Health Journal podcast, available wherever you find your favorite podcasts and at radiohealthjournal.org.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
You're listening to Radio Health Journal, the trusted news source for medicine, science, and technology. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
I'm Mayan Vosta-Betancourt.
And I'm Greg Johnson. This week, why is food insecurity on the rise for the first time in a decade?
We've made lots of medical advancements in terms of cancer, both diagnosis and treatment, but Black women largely haven't benefited from many of those medical advancements.
But first, the 30-year study that's changing healthcare for Black women.
Parents generally, regardless of income level, want their children to eat nutritious food. The reality is that income constraints can make that hard for many families, and so they have to make tough choices.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
The innovation you've been waiting for is here. The Big Cheese at Crunchwrap Supreme and Tostada from Taco Bell. Built on the 16X Cheez-It platform with the first flavor matrix stable enough to make a Cheez-It Tostada possible and cheesy enough to power a Crunchwrap. Because if you want to change the world, you have to bring something big to the table. Think big and order the Big Cheese at Crunchwrap Supreme and Tostada from Taco Bell. At participating U.S. Taco Bell locations for limited time only while supplies last. Contact store for participation which varies.
Each week on the Viewpoints Radio podcast, you'll hear from our leading experts on an important topic within education, history, society, psychology, and more.
When you have lawmakers that create systematic policies that are really only set up to favor people with deep pockets, then you have the rise of corporate industry taking over.
Viewpoints Radio podcast is produced by our team of award-winning journalists. Subscribe today by searching Viewpoints Radio wherever you listen to podcasts.
The improvements that have been made in modern medicine have saved countless lives. Many cancer diagnoses that used to be an immediate death sentence now have various treatments that give patients extra years with loved ones. However, Dr. Lauren McCullough, Associate Professor at Rollins School of Public Health, says the progress has left some communities behind, particularly Black women.
We like to share that we've made lots of medical advancements in terms of cancer, both diagnosis and treatment, but Black women largely haven't benefited from many of those medical advancements. And I can give you an example in breast cancer. In the 1980s, we introduced both mammography, so screening for breast cancer, as well as endocrine therapy, which targets cancer, making it better or easier to treat. And since 1980, that's when we've seen the disparities grow. And so it's with the introduction of new medical technologies where we really see some of the biggest gaps in terms of race for cancer.
These gaps have been well documented for decades, not just for access to healthcare, but also in life expectancy after diagnosis.
When it comes to cancer, Black women are more likely to be diagnosed with late-stage disease and also more likely to be diagnosed with cancers that tend to be more aggressive and harder to treat. And because of this, this in part contributes to the disparities in survivorship that we see among Black women. What we know is that for most cancers, with very, very few exceptions, Black women are less likely to survive once being diagnosed with cancer.
There are many known factors that affect survivorship, including poverty, a patient's insurance, and proximity to care. But McCullough says there's a part of the puzzle that we don't yet know. Many of the factors can seemingly be attributed to low income, but research shows that even in higher socioeconomic neighborhoods, the disparities are still obvious.
And so there's a lot that we don't know about the presence of comorbid conditions, which may impact treatment. What we don't know about racism and discrimination in the healthcare setting. We also haven't really contended with some of the environmental pressures and impacts that disproportionately affect Black women.
These blind spots in research have sparked the genesis of a decades-long study called Voices of Black Women. Led by the American Cancer Society, this research will span at least 30 years and involve 100,000 women. McCullough is a principal investigator on the project. The rest of the team is made up completely of women, most of whom are Black, which McCullough feels is important to the success of this research.
Even though I am a single Black woman and by no means represent all Black women, I think the context by which I have had to navigate and live my life helps to inform the study. It helps us to think about what types of questions we want to ask, the sensitivity by which we want to ask them, and also being able to honor and respect this community in a way that you really can when you have that representation on the study team.
It's also important for building a foundation of trust with women that are dedicating years of their life to be a part of this research. While 30 years is a long time, McCullough says it's necessary to be able to understand the whole spectrum of this population. We need to pinpoint the different factors of a 25-year-old's journey with cancer compared to a 60-year-old's.
So by following over a long period of time, we'll be able to inform what's happening on both ends, both for younger women under 40 and for older women. We'll also be able to look at different types of questions over the life of the study. So early on, we may be able to better describe the environments that women are contending with that may influence their cancer. Midway through the study, we may get at those early questions about why more aggressive cancers. And then we imagine that after a decade or so, we can start to think about survivorship and mortality from cancer.
Many long-term studies have strived to be racially diverse, to encompass all perspectives. But McCullough says that the minority participation is often too low to research the more specific questions. And so, Voices of Black Women is only focusing on one group, rather than comparing multiple communities.
We know that the counterfactual of a Black woman is not a white woman. And so rather than trying to address disparities, we really want to be able to optimize minority health. And so having a study that is homogenous with respect to race is going to be important because we know that there are some Black women that do well and there are other Black women that don't do well. And what we want to do is to be able to inform those that don't, well, what's happening in this group that does.
As we mentioned earlier, the issue of access may be one of the most discussed contributors, but McCullough feels like that's just scratching the surface. The study will question women on the social and structural barriers that exist, because all aspects of life factor into improving health outcomes.
We're not just treating the biology in terms of cancer, or we're not just treating the social barrier in terms of access. We're treating the total person. And that person exists within a community, which exists within a larger infrastructure that impacts how they interact with the healthcare system and the type of healthcare they get. And so as researchers, I think we have to get out of our silos of what we do and start to think about what are all the various aspects that impact a person's health.
The study will also examine how these factors impacted previous generations. Our ancestors have an influence on our health, which is evident when breaking down your family's medical history at the doctor's office. But even with the historical insight, it can still be shocking when the same conditions start showing up in our own lives. Danielle Musselman's grandparents both died from cancer, but she still felt blindsided when the same diagnosis came for her mother.
It's like I remember right in where I was in my house whenever she called me and told me the news that she had breast cancer. And she was young. I mean, she was in her mid-50s and certainly what, you know, and was completely healthy. Certainly wasn't anything that was on her radar, but luckily she was diligent about her mammograms and such. And that's how it was detected for her.
Musselman's mom immediately underwent a double mastectomy and chemotherapy. Luckily, she's been in remission now for more than 15 years, but some of her friends didn't have the same luck. Based on this family history, Musselman feels a duty to participate in McCullough's study. She hopes it will finally bring some well overdue answers, if not for herself, then for her daughter. The interesting part of this cancer research is that participants cannot have been diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. McCullough says this will allow them to study all aspects of the disease progression over time.
One of our essential questions is why do Black women develop more aggressive cancers? And so we can't actually answer that question if people already have cancer. So we have to start with a group of people that aren't affected with cancer, be able to follow them over time to understand what are their exposures, what are their experiences, what are their behaviors. And then we can figure out those differences between women that develop no cancer versus a less aggressive cancer versus a more aggressive cancer.
Committing to a 30-year study may seem daunting, but the actual amount of participation is very limited.
Over the next 30 years, we will contact participants just twice per year, two 30-minute sessions. And so what I try and remind women is 30 years feels like a long time, but what we're asking is 1 hour of your time every year for 30 years, which basically equates to essentially 24 hours over the course of 30 years, about a work day. So it is a long period of time, but it's also a very small investment for potentially really robust gains in our knowledge around Black women's health.
Musselman's been involved with the American Cancer Society for years by organizing fundraising and charity events. So her participation was a no-brainer. And while not everyone has that deep of a connection to cancer, Musselman says that sadly, there's good odds that it will affect you or a loved one at some point in life.
About a year ago, my closest friend here in Arkansas was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. And I remember the doctor said, don't Google it. And she didn't Google it. And I did. And some of the things that it says, you know, are just horrible. And I have learned that this is a cancer that like 10, 15 years ago, that it was a death sentence. And through cancer research, she is healthy. The doctor said, you're going to die of something else one day, but not because of this. And that's only because of cancer research. And so I've seen it with my own eyes. You know what I mean? I've seen someone who has been the benefit of cancer research. And I just know, even with breast cancer, that's one of the ones that they've just come so far, but there is still
a lot more that they need to know when it comes to Black women and breast cancer outcomes. And if we don't participate, they're not going to be able to find those answers.
Anyone interested in participating in this research can learn more at voices.cancer.org. You can find more information about Dr. Lauren McCullough, Danielle Musselman, and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. I'm Elizabeth Westfield. This segment is brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Coming up, how to solve food insecurity in America when Radio Health Journal returns.
Summer is the season we all look forward to, and Macy's is kicking it off with summer's greatest hits, a celebration of those spontaneous moments that we'll remember forever. That day at the beach, backyard barbecues, summer weddings, and fireworks. Because no matter what summer has in store, Macy's is here for the ride. For the big days and all the little moments that make up summer's greatest hits. Let's make this a summer to remember. Check out Macy's.com/summerhits today.
So you just used bug spray in your home. Now what? Well, between the waiting and waiting for things to dry up and keeping your family away from the mess, it hits you. You could have used Zevo. Unlike other bug sprays that stick around, Zevo goes from kill to clean in seconds. Plus, it's safe for use around people and pets when used as directed. Zevo, people friendly, bug deadly.
When many of us think about child hunger, our minds usually turn to other third world countries. However, the problem is right in our backyard. While policymakers often use the term child hunger, Dr. Sarah Bleich says the actual issue is food insecurity, which is not having enough access to food to meet your basic needs.
So as we think about the problem of food insecurity, it's not just the fact that children's bellies are empty and therefore they have this feeling of hunger. There are a lot of very clear negative effects that come along with food insecurity. So for example, it has been shown to be associated with negative academic performance for children and even negative behavior in the classroom. It's been shown to be associated with a host of health issues like asthma and anemia. And it's also been associated with developmental delays. And so it is very much in the best interest of our entire society to think collectively about how do we meaningfully address the problem of food insecurity among children, because it has the potential to impact their future productiveness.
Bleich is a professor of public health policy at Harvard Chan School.